The material discussed is opinion only and is not intended to be relied upon in any manner as legal, tax, investment advice, or recommendation.
Welcome to the CRE Exchange Podcast, where we deep dive into the global trends and challenges of CRE professionals across all sectors of the commercial real estate industry. We engage with experts in the space to bring you innovative insights into industry practices, opportunities, and challenges to better inform your decisions. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate.
Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of CRE Exchange. I'm Cole Perry, your host and senior market analyst here at Altus Group, a leading provider of asset and fund level intelligence. I'm joined by Omar Eltzerai, our U.S. Director of Research. And today we're excited to have some special guest interviews for you. We're joined by Darren Fisk and Jay Miller of Forum Investment Group. Darren is a multifamily expert with more than 20 years of experience in real estate and finance. He's the sole founder of Forum. Forum is a private real estate investment firm specializing in the multifamily sector. With assets in over 20 states, Forum built a foundation specifically in development and has evolved into acquisition and financing, one of the only multifamily real estate firms with experience in each distinct area. In 2018, the firm established its investment management platform to offer institutions and financial intermediaries access to multifamily debt, equity, and private credit exposure. Heavily involved in the business, Darren leads all Forum's business strategies, including serving as the head of two investment committees, overseeing the firm's investor relations, and working closely with the company's development and operations teams. Jay brings more than 30 years in real estate investment experience to Forum, with demonstrated success developing and executing business strategies, managing teams, and systems. As CIO, Jay oversees the firm's real estate investment team, chairs Forum's investment committees, and is responsible for driving the firm's continued growth through multifamily equity and debt investment opportunities. Prior to joining Forum, Jay spent 16 years with DWS Group, a global asset management firm, where he was co-lead portfolio manager for the flagship open-ended investment fund, and previously a lead portfolio manager for the firm's value-add investment fund. Before that, Jay served as executive director of corporate solutions at JLL, a global real estate services firm. Darren and Jay, thank you so much for being with us. And Omar, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you so much. I'm very much looking forward to this conversation. And I guess to get other folks as excited, I wanted to jump in a little bit about each of your backgrounds. So Darren, from Northern California to the University of Colorado Boulder, where you studied finance and played Division I football as a fullback for the Buffaloes. How did you end up founding Forum?
First of all, thanks for having us, guys. Pleasure to be here. Forum, like many things, I was an entrepreneur when I was little. I had my own bike store when I think I was in sixth grade, although it was more of a fantasy than anything. But I started off in the real estate finance business, and I knew I always wanted to own and operate real estate. And interviewing with different real estate brokerage firms, what have you, and realized that using my finance degree to understand how real estate deals financially went together, I got into the finance business. And in 2003, one of my finance clients on one end and another on the other, I paired those two up and had the opportunity to buy into this first multifamily acquisition. So while I was doing the real estate finance business, and fast forward to the great financial crisis, my borrowers got in trouble on a development in Boulder, Colorado, and he asked me if I had an interest in moving forward with the project with his partner and said, sure, that sounds great. And so it was more of a opportunity than anything that provided itself when I wasn't looking for it.
Fantastic. And I guess when not building Forum, how do you spend your spare time if you have any?
It is hard to find time. I got three kids, a sophomore boy, a freshman boy in high school, and then my daughter's in seventh grade. So, you know, to me, Forums, it's not work. They say the art is not knowing when somebody's working or playing. And to me, Forum's a passion of mine. But outside of a Forum, it's really with friends and family and my kids.
Fantastic. And I would assume that you're still following the Buffaloes. How do they look in this upcoming season?
I am. It's like chasing a girl for 25 years and she tells you no forever. And finally, she opens the door. And that was last year when Coach Prime came. So I did help with the 5430 Foundation, been helping them raise some money. I actually got an email yesterday saying, hey, we got a lot more money to raise this year. So I think maybe back to your original question, what do I do in my spare time? I think I'm going to be helping bring some folks into the Buffalo's investment donation camp to try and make us competitive. But Coach Prime's got a great thing. There's a lot of excitement. And I think we're number one or three in the transfer portal. And that's the way he's trying to build the program today, just given what we were dealt.
Fantastic. And Jay, so you were studying English and religious studies at the University of Virginia, and then chose to pursue your legal career, getting your JD from Washington and Lee University School of Law, and then putting that degree to use. You served tech, energy, and finance clients before ultimately moving into real estate at JLL and then as a portfolio manager at DWS. How did you ultimately come to Colorado? I could see Colorado being a central point between Virginia and California. Can you speak a little bit ultimately what brought you to Forum?
Yeah, thanks, Omar. And again, thanks again for having Darren and me join you guys. Yeah, it's more about geography. You know, I came from University of Virginia as a Virginia native in 1988, moved out to San Francisco for a year and just never looked back. I moved to San Francisco and the Niners were in the World Series in 89. We had an earthquake. There was a World Series. I was the center of the universe, it felt like, for a kid out of college. And so I stayed there and we raised our family there. I have two boys that are graduated and gainfully employed, thankfully. And, you know, about what, probably 2 years ago now, Darren and I were put together on a Zoom call just like this. And I happened to be up in Truckee, California, which is in the Lake Tahoe area, and a place where we like to spend a big chunk of our summer. And Darren and I were on a video. And the first thing that came out of the mouth of this guy from Denver was, "Are you in Truckee?" So I kind of looking around thinking maybe he's in my basement or something. And we found each other that we had this Northern California connection. He grew up in Los Gatos. I had been in California for 30 years, so I'd gone native. And he had this opportunity, which he just described, to come to Denver and join him in continuing to build this business. And it was really exciting. It was a good time for my wife and me to make a change. Denver is a really easy place to come to. We've been here. I've been investing here for 20 years and knew the place. We'll get to it. But with the outdoor activities here, it keeps us outside. And so our office is here in Cherry Creek and we live around the corner and I walk to work. So it's a pretty good life we have between the opportunity here at Forum and our enjoyment of being in Denver. It's a really exciting time for us.
I guess no regrets with leaving law?
No, it's interesting. I tell people that I loved the practice. I actually liked doing it. I started my career as a litigator. I wasn't particularly good in front of juries. That was apparent pretty quickly, but I really liked the research and the writing. And so I moved into real estate transactions, and turning an idea into a written agreement is something that I really enjoyed. And it informs a lot of what I do today in setting our investment strategy and organizing our agreements with counterparties. But no, unfortunately, the economic model of billing by the hour, it remains a tough model to make a career out of. So no regrets, but have great friends in the law, still love the law, follow Supreme Court activities and everything. So it's always part of me, but not as relevant in what I'm doing day to day, that's for sure.
Fantastic. And so now turning a little bit more towards the company. The company started in 2007 and has really grown quite substantially to what it is today, with a total acquisition and development cost more than $2.5 billion, which represents current and historical multifamily portfolio. And this includes stabilized assets under construction and assets in lease up as of the end of 2023. This is very substantial growth. Darren, can you walk me through the genesis of Forum and the evolution and some of the key milestones over the years?
Sure. Again, I think it was just going back to what I started with, being an entrepreneur and seeing opportunity. I wish I could write a book on the lessons learned in life, because I think I tell folks in this space, I want to teach you what not to do, not what to do, because you'll figure out what to do. But it would save us all a lot of time if there was the lessons learned. But I saw an opportunity in the middle of the GFC, just given that developer that was in trouble. And I always say we're really good at connecting the dot. As generic as that may sound, it's like seeing what the macro worldview, US view, what's going on in our world, and how does that affect our day-to-day lives and businesses in multifamily? So, you know, in Boulder, in the middle of the great financial crisis, to be breaking ground in 2008, a gentleman I started working for, Andy Miller, I love this story. He asked me, we had 240 units under construction in 2008. And all I knew was nothing in Boulder, Colorado had been built in 25 years over 50 units. And so having gone to school there, in the 29th Street Mall, we had a non-recourse loan with HUD. It was 40 years fixed rate. And it was an A-plus location. I just couldn't believe I had the opportunity to be involved in this. So my partner at the time, Lou Delacava, said, Darren, if you get it built, I'll get it entitled. And he had been on city council at some point and had confidence that he could do that. And so I just saw an opportunity to build something in a market that was underserved. And everybody was scared. It's easy to make up a story, you know, looking back, like, wow, we were so smart. But Andy Miller looked at me one day and said, Darren, this is the greatest downturn since the Great Depression. I said, I know, Andy, and I've got the greatest opportunity in Boulder, Colorado. He grabs his temples. He says, you're stupid. You're just stupid. And I said, thank you. I haven't gotten a compliment like that in a long time. And then fast forward a year later, we have another 300 units under construction in 2009 in Denver, and then another 362 units in Denver under construction. And all I could think about was, I was able to buy the corner of Main and Main three times in this land basis. People thought, hey, Fisk has lost his mind, too many concussions, hitting the B gap in football, hitting these linebackers, what have you. And to me, it was like I was so steadfast that I had fixed rate construction debt. We had these irreplaceable locations. And candidly, I didn't really have a lot to lose, but my real estate finance days always taught me, look at how you get in trouble, not how much money you're going to make. So that was my focus. Like, how could we get in trouble? Okay, fixed rate debt, GMP locked in on our construction costs, A-plus locations. And so that is really how I saw that first opportunity. And then opportunity, you talk about the evolution. In 08, again, we had a few investors that were single family home builders, just like in Boulder, one of the partners filed bankruptcy. I said, I don't ever want to be a one-trick pony where when the market shuts off, you're out of business. You're letting people go and then you're hiring it back. And so you fast forward today, and it was really hard for an entrepreneur. We built Google's campus in Boulder. We did an offsite parking lot at the Denver International Airport. And about 8 years ago, I said, I have to get really focused. And for a real estate entrepreneur, that's really hard because real estate people are usually about a collection of deals, not about building a business. And so I said, I have to build a business. We have a tree with limbs. Those were our deals, and we had no roots. And at some point, if you add more and more limbs onto this tree, the tree's going to fall over if you don't have the roots in the ground. I said, I want to be able to invest throughout a real estate cycle, not to a cycle. Fast forward today, we now have debt in a strategy. We have real estate multifamily credit in the strategy. We have real estate equity in a strategy in funds, three funds. And then we have our one-off developments. So all we do is multifamily. And candidly, if we didn't have our real estate debt products today, I'd be like every other multifamily group. A, if you were a developer, you're probably out of business or not doing anything. And two, if you were an acquisition group only, you probably wouldn't be buying anything. And for Forum, we're strategic investors. We haven't bought anything in 4 years. Now, 8 years ago, we bought 12 assets in a year. We had eight developments planned for 2023. We started zero. Why? We see opportunity in debt. We're getting equity returns in debt. So why would we go on the equity side? Now, I think we're pivoting back today where we're seeing still equity-like returns in debt. And I think there's this once in a decade, like the GFC again, to have these equity-like returns in equity again, because multifamily is not distressed, it's stressed.
I love that. It's not distressed, it's stressed. We're going to probably reuse that quote, right? A number of times. But with a diversified business that Forum has really come to be, what would you say, is there still a common mission or key objective? You mentioned about connecting dots. Is there a unifying mission that Forum has?
There is. I think growing up in a small town in the Bay Area, community was like one of the defining things for me, like in a town of 30,000 people. Still, my mom lives there. dad passed away, but still like going back to the local bars, the local butcher, and there was this sense of community. So multifamily exemplifies communities, right? Like we're building and buying communities. Our partners, which we call partners, not investors, but our partners, there's this partner community as we've expanded that. So we want to be the go-to group in multifamily. And I think this vision of being able to invest up and down the capital stack in these different strategies is now paid off after all of these years, right? Like the GFC back in 08, fast forward to 2023, we're seeing the fruits of our labor come through. And it goes back to that building community, like building a culture and building a team of experts. Jay, 5 years ago, like I couldn't attract somebody like Jay to my team. We weren't there yet. We didn't have the foundation to attract somebody of his caliber at that time. So we're steadfast in building this multifamily platform up and down the capital stack with a culture where we've got this institutional quality, but we're not order takers. We're not just allocators. We're strategic investors. That will never change.
Jay, many of these other institutional RE firms, what would you say is Forum's differentiating advantage when competing with them? Or what are some of the characteristics that you noted and were probably a part of your decision to join?
As Darren was talking about, he's been a developer and a lender and an owner investor. And all those things are all happening at Forum. It's not like he chose one and went for it. What he chose, in fact, was to be all of those things because each of those different disciplines has its moment in the market. And they typically don't overlap a ton. They do overlap a little bit, but it is important to be, as he was pointing out, so that if you're just an equity investor right now and for the past 2 years, you haven't been doing anything. It's not the right time to put money out. It was like when I was only an equity investor. So from 08 to 2012, we weren't doing a whole lot. If we had been a lender or a developer, we would have been busy. So it is very unique in the real estate investment management business to have ground up development expertise. And I don't mean funding a developer to go develop, because that's what I did. That's really equity investing. To be a developer, to go get entitlements, build it yourself, having that expertise and then having the lending expertise, these are all different relationships. So really unique to have that all. And as you can imagine, once they're all in and operating, it's really beneficial to have those disciplines evaluating the investments in the other two disciplines. So as the chief investment officer, I love having my debt team bring a construction loan up and then having the development team ask questions about the pro forma for our borrower. That's where it really sings, right? You can, and for investors in any of our products, that's really meaningful in terms of having that kind of expertise all evaluating the investments. And so one of the first things I did when I joined Forum, and Darren has been really great in letting me do my things here in the thing that he's built, you can tell this is him in lots of ways, right? Was come in and take all the various meetings of all these disciplines and dump them into one big meeting on Monday afternoons. And everybody's there. It's unusual because was this really a good use of whatever discipline we're talking about, the people that aren't in that discipline, is that a good use of their time? Should we be sharing this kind of information around? And it's actually the point, getting everybody in, having the community in evaluating everything we do is what makes Forum unique. And it's one of a number of reasons why I came here, having all those investment platforms, having an in-house developer, having an in-house debt team, but more importantly, have Envision. You can see from my resume, I'm from a big law firm to a big brokerage to a big global investment bank. And in all those places, you have the state-of-the-art process in terms of what we do and how we do it. What you lack a little bit is the room to have vision in the next thing, and let's do it this way instead of that way. Clearly, that's Darren's calling card, not the least of which to do all that, and then also have the confidence to bring in, call it outside experts, to come and participate in it with him. And so having that combination was something that made the professional decision super easy. And then having it all happen at Cherry Creek Denver was a pretty straightforward decision for us.
Do you find that the people on your team still need to wear specific hats? Or is it something that the, say, whether it's these Monday meetings or just the focus of Forum being on through the cycle, a diversified multifamily partner playing different roles, is that something that kind of removes the concept of wearing different hats and everybody starts looking at opportunities more holistically?
Yeah, it's a great question because you look at Darren, he clearly has worn all the hats and built a business around it, right? And one of the things that we've had discussions about is, can the investments team all wear all those hats all at the same time? And I say, yeah, you know, when they've been around for 25 years, sure. But today, got a debt team and they are focused on generating debt opportunities, development. Now, you might have the same person doing both, but when it's sometimes a different community, real estate remains the last of the great inefficient businesses. We literally buy real estate by sending an email to somebody. It's an escrow. If you've ever bought a house, it literally is you send a check to somebody and they hold it and they get the other guy's check and then they spit out a bunch of paper. It is not an exchange. And so that only happens if you trust your counterparty. And you only generate that trust from spending a lot of time in your markets and knowing that you're an expert in whatever you're trading in, whether you're making a loan or doing a development or buying. And so those groups of people are different out in the world. So in that respect, I count on my people to have really deep debt relationships or really deep development relationships. And to that extent, they are wearing that hat. But when you come back into Forum, you better know that the debt team is going to have some questions for you, development person. And the development person is going to have questions for the debt team. So they definitely have to speak all the languages. And anybody who's going to end up in leadership at Forum certainly is not going to be one or the other. Like, you have to be able to see it. You're seeing across markets. You're seeing across time. I met somebody over the weekend. Darren and I haven't had a chance to talk, but you talk about what they do and how they do it. And this person's in real estate and they're in multifamily. And you've got to know where you might fit in their world to see if they could be an investor. They could be a counterparty with you. They could be a borrower. You've got to understand how that all works to get there. You got to be both an expert in the discipline and understand how they all fit together. And I think that's what Darren and I and the other leaders here know. That's why we're doing it. And that's the promise of this business.
And Darren, as you've grown the firm really to provide offerings to your partners or investors up and down the capital stack, how has this been received? Is it something that would run into confusion of, oh, I thought you only did X or I thought you only did Y?
Going back to eight years ago, I think the biggest surprise for folks that knew me was the fact that I said, hey, we're just going to do one thing. We're really going to focus on just multifamily and not finding the one-off opportunity here and there. And when I interview folks like that are coming to Forum, I ask them, my favorite question is, what's your genius? And they look at me like, okay, I think I know what you mean. And then they get ready to answer it. And I think, again, connecting the dots, as I said, having vision, and maybe this innate ability to see like where markets have come from and where they're headed. Because nothing in life lasts forever. Your friends, your family, your health, your business, like things change. And you're in a positive vortex getting better, and you're in a negative vortex getting worse. And so a few examples of this, you know, in 08, when we built a project here in Denver called Veranda, it was 362 units. It was a wrap product, like a figure eight Texas donut, as we call it. We're all into that product for $170,000 a unit, okay? Today, that's $470,000 a unit, right? So a decade later, inflation, like, it just changed. The days, and I think the other thing I learned is our investors or people, I shouldn't just say investor, our partners, they don't change. People in life primarily just don't like change. I love change, right? Now, I like stability, but I love change. And it was back to my comment about getting better. That first deal that I ever bought in Albuquerque, New Mexico in 2003, it was 252 units called La Vida Buena. Excuse me, Mesa Ridge, La Vida Buena was after that. we needed to raise $3.3 million for 252 units. Today, to buy that same thing, we probably need 10x that. We probably need $33 million. What changed? We keep learning through these different downturns like the GFC in 08, lenders that were doing 90% non-recourse loans like Wachovia, Walmart, they're gone. So what happened? Banking industry said, hey, we got to delever. Then we have COVID. What happened? We have this office, like a fundamental structural shift in our market, and we had to change with it. What I realized was and how we evolved as a company to having these three strategies that are now in funds is I couldn't send out an email and in 2 weeks go raise $33 million. And I'm one of the best capital raisers in Forum is right out there. I got a great track record. It just wasn't sustainable. And people will say, hey, we love looking at your one-off deals. I said, I do too. The problem is, if I go to any broker and they say, hey, where's your capital to raise this $33 million on this acquisition? I said, hey, I'm going to go syndicate it. Just trust me. They're going to say, okay, we'll put up $2 or $3 million on refundable and then we'll see about that. So I just realized those things were changing. Like bank leverage from 90% today to get a construction loan, it's probably 50, right? The deal veranda I said that we built for 170 is now 470. And so there was just exponential growth and change that we had to adapt to, whether I liked it or not. And so we've just had to evolve to A, create these different strategies and be competitive to keep investing in what we're really good and passionate about.
And Omar, I'll jump in and say it's different on the investor side. I think we find that investors, they don't have an opinion on what we should or shouldn't be doing generally. They want us to bring them opportunities and explain where it fits in their portfolio and beyond that. Now, on the management side, I'm running into colleagues that I've been in the business for 25 years like we are. And my favorite question I'm getting from people about what I'm doing is, how do you guys do that? How do you do that? So wait a minute, you're doing mezzanine or subordinate construction loan lending for multifamily development right now. Where? All over the country. How are you doing that? Every time, I love it because that just shows how we're unique in what we're doing. And then if you have the question long enough with an investor, they come to understand that as well. But it is that ability to cross the disciplines and do it on a national scale gives me a lot of confidence to be out there. Because I'm not a fundraiser, I'm not Darren, but it is my responsibility to be able to articulate the story and do it confidently and make sure everybody on the team can as well. It's a good formula right now, really is.
And what are some of the forces that you would say that really influence your either decisions or also, I would say, that help you understand the changes that are taking place in the world that force you to adapt?
Sure. I'll tell you, and I'm sure Darren's going to have his opinion on this, but one thing I try to boil it down to for everybody, and this would be for maybe an investor that has never invested in real estate, and they're trying to, you know, what do I need to think about? What's good? What's bad? What am I watching for? If I pick up the Wall Street Journal, what do I care about that relates to multifamily investing? And it's income. It's demand. That's what I do. It always boils down to, is that asset going to generate more net operating income next year than it did this year? And whether we're making a loan to it, we're building it, we're owning it, that is the threshold question. What most talk about right now is what's the Fed up to, right? And we're like way up here at a totally different. What's the Fed up to? I don't know. I watch Bloomberg and you can get a new opinion every 10 minutes. But that's capital markets risk. And there's no doubt that it is a huge influence on total returns. But what we bring to the investor world is a working knowledge of capital markets and what they're likely to be doing on terms of a trend basis. But we're not trading that. There's other disciplines that trade that. What our expertise is driving income, driving revenue, knowing what property, you know, what street corner is more likely to do that? What kind of improvements on that street corner are more likely to do that? What kind of operational expertise is more likely to do that? That's what you can really trust us to be expert in. And I think that's our calling card. You know, whether when you buy it, rates are going to be at this, and then in 7 years, they're going to be at that. What we definitely have an opinion, But you know, that's not our trade. Our trade is growing net operating income, and everything else works out if you focus on that.
I think kind of trends, what do we see? You know, in the GFC, first of all, in the GFC, it was like everybody had two black eyes and a broken nose and nobody knew which way it was up. And I always say you get in trouble in real estate for two reasons. You're over-leveraging, your debt comes due, and it's those two things, right? I've never heard anybody that got into trouble because they had no debt on a property. So it cuts both ways. But then you fast forward to COVID, and we had owned a lot in these secondary and tertiary markets. We're buying for cash flow, right? And the days of getting a year one 12% cash on cash amortizing, again, became a 7% interest only. And our investors, hey, we love those 12%. I said, so do I, but it's going to a 5. And sure enough, it went to a 5, what have you. But you just realize, you look, where are people moving? It's like buddies from New York leave and they're like, oh, we're moving somewhere called Denver, Colorado. And their parents are like, hey, Johnny, when are you coming back to New York? It's mom, dad, I'm never coming back. Oh, interesting. Maybe we should take note. Why are you there? The lifestyle, the expense, the tech. And so just like you're seeing people move from New York to Florida, just noticing those macro trends, right? Like it's my job to see the macro trends that affect our primary business of multifamily. And it's Jay and our investments team to understand also the macro, but the micro, what the submarkets. And so those are some of the things that we're looking at each and every day. Like I have a routine, you know, in the morning, like I just want to understand the macro of our world. And I think the people may not phrase it this way, but I always say like there are three necessities in life you have to have. It's food, water, and shelter. And we're in the shelter business. Like you have to have a roof over your head or you're homeless, right? So we're in the needs business.
So I like this approach. It sounds like you have a combined top-down and bottom-up approach to identifying and assessing opportunities. Would you say that whether the macro level or on the micro level has really changed that either process or has been disruptive over the last, say, year?
It's constantly changing and it doesn't change overnight. It's like when you go and see your parents and they haven't seen you for 6 years, they're like, oh, you've lost weight or you've gained weight. You're like, I have, I didn't. Like, but it's when somebody sees you every day, they don't really notice it. And so one of the things I think we as a company have been patiently waiting for, as I mentioned, we haven't bought anything in 4 years, is where's kind of the ceiling on rates? And it was like maybe 3 weeks ago that Chairman Powell came out on 60 Minutes and was talking about, hey, we're not raising rates anymore. But the question was, how much are we going to drop rates? Why that's relevant is like, where's the bottom? How do we get price discovery? Because as the 10-year goes up and down 30 basis points or this talk of a 25 basis point cuts, like we just need some stability in multifamily from a value standpoint. And I think we will look back at 2023 at probably the end of 2023 and say, hey, that was pretty darn close to the bottom. And I think we're now going into this period in time where folks were hoping that there was going to be these huge rate cuts. But candidly, if you've got a bridge loan that you did a value on, you're at 8.5%. And let's just say the Fed does cut 50 or just because it's at 8% or 7%, it doesn't matter. That's not enough. It needs to go down to 5% to make a difference, you know, a real difference, just like on a home equity line of credit or on a car loan. So I believe the consumer is stressed, even though the data may not show it today.
I would agree with that wholeheartedly. And I guess Forum's been on this pretty accelerated and very rapid growth trajectory over the last better portion of really since the GFC. What will characterize the next phase of growth or what has your attention for growing the firm?
I think more of what we're doing. Some of our products that we have on the debt side were actually not optimal or too small. The real estate debt market, $7 trillion. We're just a speck of that. So there's a lot. The bigger we get in debt actually opens up more tools in our arsenal. I don't believe the same thing in equity, meaning if you have money coming in and you have to put money out, I don't like putting money out. I like investing in things. And there's a big difference. I tell people off the record, I'm like, we're like a farmer. You know, we plant our own crops. We harvest our own crops. And now we've created this distribution team to go distribute our crops. A lot of people are just distributing crops. They want to come to, like Jay's old company would come to a group like ours, not that they did, but to help them distribute and do that. And so I think just doing more of what we're doing. We're just on the J curve of what we're doing, working on products to help with 1031. So we're always trying to innovate. And Jay, I think, said it best. We're just, real estate was trying to get into the technology business. And if people still want to try and do deals on the back of napkins, and we're kind of that pace or maybe a little bit ahead of that in real estate right now. So
the market really, it is the investment side of the market right now, I think, is really exciting. You have to see it though in like apartment rents during the next, call it 12 months, probably aren't going to go up a whole lot, actually. We've built a lot of apartments out there, but the demand is so steady. And we know, because we're developers and we know what the pro forma, there a lot have been developed, but there's not a lot being developed right now. And we can see coming, the demand is steady. We follow the jobs. Our top down is to go into the markets where there's jobs. If there's job growth, there's renters. If there's renters, you've got demand. Now, how can we be in the exact right place to capture it? What properties should we own and where within that market? That's what Darren was talking about, submarket. We can see it coming. I think when you first said it, I think our equity investment operations right now is really, it's just a question of how much capital do we have invest, because I think the market's coming our way. But it's just as true for the debt. And the way we think about it over time, it's just as true for development. We can be a lot bigger and still improve, make our investment activities even more accretive for our investors. A question that Darren gets as Forum has changed, and I get it on his behalf, which is, how big is too big? You know, at what point are you guys going to be? And the answer is, for doing what Forum was doing, they did top out, which is why Forum is changing into more of a fund vehicle. So we can still serve those investors, but in a way that we can scale. And that's what's happening right now, is we're scaling our distribution and scaling our investment capabilities. And we are blessed to be investing in the United States of America, where, and I've fundraised all over the world, and you go into the other regions and there's lots of people in lots of big markets. But in the US, we have at any given time 20 or more investable markets where you can go in and be very confident that you can find investment opportunities. It's the whole country and they're all moving up and down at the same time. So there's room for a lot of investment management, high quality investment management in the US. And that gives me a lot of confidence that as we grow our investor base, we can continue to find accretive investments for them.
So following the large and I would say very powerful demographic trends of where people are moving, where they're working, to identify your markets, that makes sense to me. But one of the things that we've seen really, whether it's in headlines or a number of pieces have started diving in a bit deeper, they've raised a little bit of negativity around multifamily, largely targeted at the transitional debt that is coming due. With some of this negativity, are there aspects of it that you would say are credible? Are there any concerns that you have for the multifamily market?
So yeah, I think, again, we talked about stress versus distress. We have the overbuilding in certain markets, some of the Sunbelt markets, maybe Arizona, places like that. So the issue when I say distress, like office is distress. I think you're going to see banks flush office this year. They got to move it off their balance sheet. It's structural. Whereas in multifamily, we have a lot of supply that's being absorbed. I think 24 months out, just given the lack of new starts this year, we're going to see another inflationary run, you know, in multifamily again. So I think being patient and watching out on those markets. But the interesting thing is a lot of these stressed assets are 95% occupied. Like they're fully occupied. They just have debt pressure, whether that's refinancing out. And a lot of these, again, the first wave of these stress deals will probably be the ones you don't want. And I think we're starting to see those finally come to fruition now. But there's nothing fundamentally wrong with the multifamily asset class. There might just be stress with the debt that's on it.
I couldn't agree more. Darren said it when he said that the only way you get in trouble is in debt. That if you've got an unlevered asset, it's hard to see how you get in trouble. And because what happens is not that it's not generating enough money, it's just not generating enough money to pay your debt service. And now your bank owns the property. There are plenty of investors in our world that weren't ready for rates to go up. And it's remarkable for somebody like Darren and me, when rates are historically low, the chances are that they're probably going to go up. Like, we're not geniuses. We just, you know, if they're historically low, the next move's probably up. And so in our portfolio here at Forum, we had fixed rate debt. Like, we didn't want floating rate debt that stayed super low, was like historically low. We just knew there's a lot of money to be made right there, but there's a lot of risk when that pops up. Plenty of investors are in that situation where the property's doing just fine. It's just that their interest rate quadrupled in 1 month and the property can't digest that anymore. And so they've got a problem and their lender's got a problem. And that's what you're reading about in the paper. But the problem isn't the asset class. The problem is the capitalization of some of the assets in that class. Now, office, wholly different story. I lived this in the financial crisis, both office and retail, where the problem you had was on the demand side. Well, if you got a capital markets problem and a demand problem, that's a problem. That's a whole different story. Here, it's just, you just don't get yourself into the position. And so for us, we're not living the position. There's no doubt that rising rates made total values at least level out, if not drop a little bit in some cases, but you can see the revenue going up in the future. If you don't have that, then you've got a wholly different thing. So now, as we're looking at raising money and going out to buy, our favorite targets are these properties that are good underlying properties that have a capital stack problem. And we think there's going to be really valuable opportunities in that world. As you read about multifamily in trouble, for those with fresh capital, that's a real opportunity in the multifamily investment world.
Omar, one thing I just add for those out there, we've seen obviously cap rates shift up given interest rates. And one of the things that we looked at is, what happens if cap rates do come back down? Let's assume zero NOI growth. At 50% leverage, if cap rates dropped 100 basis points, it's a 209% return on equity. Now, we're not betting on that at Forum, but let's just say the cap rates do compress 50 basis points. It's still 104.5%. So that's the cherry on top. We're expecting flat NOI growth in our portfolio this year, like we mentioned, 24 months out. So we actually feel like we've been patient, and it's a great entry point right now.
I love that. Shifting to outlooks, right? Are there any major catalysts or major events that you're watching for, either in the broader economy or specifically in the markets in which they have exposure with your portfolios?
I'll let Jay take that after I give you the macro. I think, like I said earlier, we've been waiting for the capitulation. We got a call from a gentleman 9 months ago. He said, "Hey, I need a bridge loan. I need a mezzanine loan." He had a $145 million property, had $87.5 million of debt on it, and it only sized today to about $50 million. And our internal joke was, this is not a bridge loan. This is called a cliff. There is no bridge, right? Like, you're so underwater. And so that property just got listed 2 weeks ago for $90 million, just above the debt. So I think, again, where is the ceiling on rates so we can get a floor on values? And I think, again, we'll look back at 2023 at the end and say, we now see where that floor is. Could there be a little bit of fluctuation? Absolutely. The move in treasuries of 15 or 30 basis points on a day doesn't help that. But knowing where the kind of ceiling is on rates has got us excited. Because I think now people are like, okay, there is no hope. We do now need to move. We're not going to be able to hope that rates are coming down. It's going to save the day.
Yeah, I think it is. I've said a couple of times how much we focus on revenue and demand and the income side of the properties. But in terms of market opportunities, last year was one of the lowest transactions volume years multifamily has seen in recent memory. And that's because there was so much uncertainty on the capital market side. The Fed really didn't do, but they didn't raise rates after July, but you just weren't sure. And before that, you were pretty sure that rates were going to keep going up. And so it was really hard for the market to find pricing, price discovery. As they say, you need transactions to figure out what things are worth. And if you don't know what they're worth, then you don't know what your strategy is. So now we've come 6 months of rates that haven't moved, the Fed talking about being pretty as clear as they can be late December, saying they were done raising and were beginning to think about rate cuts. The thing I'm looking for is volume to come back. The thing I worry about on that side is whether now investors are waiting for that, for the rate to start coming down. And they're like, I don't want to sell and then have rates fall. And you know, Darren made the point earlier that, look, 25 basis points isn't going to be the difference. And in whether to sell now or sell later, you know, doing this for a long time, transactions have their own momentum. At some point, you sell because of opportunity cost. You sell because you've executed your strategy, and whatever the price is at the back end, you take the price and you move on and you do your thing. I think we're at that point this year, and we're going to see more transactions volume this year, more price discovery. Once there's price discovery and people know what the opportunity is, I think everything picks up steam. And so that's what I'm looking for this year. I'm reasonably confident that we'll see that. We haven't yet, though. I expected it to really to show its kind of teeth here in the first quarter, and we're getting it little by little, but we haven't seen it yet. But I do expect that this year will be a much bigger volume year.
Darren, Jay, I really enjoyed the discussion here. I know I've been riding sidecar with Omar, but to shift gears a little bit, we do ask all of our guests the same question. And that is, if you could snap your fingers and have any change come to the industry, what would that be? We had a guest just a few weeks ago say he'd make Jay Powell disappear. It could be anything, but we like to ask that to all our guests. If you guys have any thoughts on that, we'd love to hear them.
Yeah, for me, it would be having Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, giving them the ability to provide construction or construction perm debt. We focus on the renter by necessity, that middle market housing, not the renter by choice where they're spending $10,000 or $20,000 a month and they can live anywhere. And so just given how hard it is to get a loan today, how big of a housing deficit we're in, the affordable housing crisis, and I'm talking about little A, not true big A affordable like tax credit. So that would be the one thing for me would be construction or construction perm financing from the agencies.
For me, it would be some way, I would like for the average investor to have a better understanding of what it is we do. There's a big information gap in, call it private real estate investing on a systematic basis, and what an average investor thinks it is. Even in the institutional investor class, you know, they kind of start with stocks and bonds, and then real estate is this other thing. We constantly work at better real information on the real estate as an investment class, what the options and alternatives are, where it fits into a portfolio. If I could snap my fingers, I would like to move the investor community from here to here on understanding what it is we do.
Excellent. Thank you both. And we've really enjoyed the conversation. I hope I speak for Omar in that regard as well. And Omar, I think that's all the time we've got. So I look forward to speaking to you with another episode of CRE Exchange soon. Have a good one.
Thanks, Cole. Thanks so much.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you for listening to the CRE Exchange podcast, powered by Altus Group. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a 5-star review and be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. This episode is brought to you by Altus Group, a global leader in asset and fund intelligence for commercial real estate. At Altus, we bring together capabilities across technology, analytics, valuations, tax, and development advisory services. We are guided by bold thinking, integrity, and inclusivity, partnering with CRE professionals to maximize opportunities with exceptional service experience. Find out more at altusgroup.com.